Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 22nd day of October 2020, Thursday. The weekend is almost upon us. The debate is tonight. The mute button debate, as it shall forever be known. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. I wonder if that mute button will come into play. I think the moderator should have a mute button. They're both adults running for president. How about you let them talk? And if one of them can't handle the other one talking, oh no, then they probably can't handle the rigors of being president of the United States. That's just me talking out loud. Anyway, thank you for listening, downloading, telling a friend, rating and reviewing on iTunes and all that good stuff. Please keep the word of mouth going. You're all we've got. There's easy ways to share this on social media. First one's free, kid. Hook a brother up. It's technically the Friday edition of the show, because tomorrow's edition of the show, which is usually when we do the full interview, is going to be debate reaction, which means tonight I shall be recording in the immediate aftermath, not even a time for a refractory period of the debate with Brian Darling. We'll get the debate reaction, so that way the Friday show will be debate reaction. That means today is the interview edition of the show, and we're going to be joined in a minute by Jerome Hudson. He's the entertainment editor at Breitbart.com. He was on the show last year with his book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know. Now he's back. There are 50 things they don't want you to know about Trump. If you've been looking for something, your liberal friends are like, Trump sucks, or I hear Trump. Now, the people who say Trump sucks probably wouldn't be convincible. But the people who say, I don't know, I hear Trump sucks a lot. What has Trump really done? Well, this book perfectly arms you with an answer to that. Many, 50, in fact, answers for that. So we get into a lot of that. We get into Hollywood. We get into the ridiculous garbage with Chris Pratt. We get into the Gal Gadot. You can't play her because you're the wrong ethnicity. We get into a whole bunch of things. Since he is an entertainment guy and I love talking entertainment, we fully dive into that swimming pool as well. It's a good dude. Great book. Important book. It's out Tuesday. If you pre-order it now, you'll get it Tuesday, maybe even Monday. And you'll have that ammo to go at your friends who go, I don't know who I'm going to vote for, in the all-important week leading up to the election. So we're going to get to Jerome Hudson directly. But first, I got to tell you about AncientLifeOil.com. CBD oil, you've heard all about it. It's all the rage. People are telling you it can do this, it can do that, it can do the other thing. And I'm here to tell you it's an amazing substance. It really, really is. And the best CBD oil on the market, 100% pure organic CBD oil, is from AncientLifeOil.com. They have the full spectrum CBD oil that has a trace amount of THC. Or if that doesn't appeal to you, if that's what's been holding you back, they have broad spectrum CBD oil, which has 0%, zero, not even a trace amount of THC in it. So you pick your flavor, you throw it in your cart, you enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K at checkout, click apply, you get free fast shipping. It'll help you with your aches and pains, helps me with eye strain, helps me sleep. I'm not a tosser and turner like I used to be. See what people are saying. You'll find out. And then you'll go, well, I'm going to try it. You might as well try the best. And that's AncientLifeOil.com. Promo code Derek at checkout for free fast shipping. All right. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com, by the way. And the Curse Show coming up on Saturday is going to be lit, especially with the debate and all of that. coming up. You're not going to want to miss that. Patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. Now, with no further ado, I give you Jerome Hudson.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, as promised, as teased at the top of the show, as teased yesterday on the show, actually, we are joined by an author. He had a big bestseller last year that nobody wanted to admit was a bestseller, so the Los Angeles Times simply just pretended it didn't exist. With the 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know. Now he's back this Tuesday, means pre-order now, with 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump. It's Breitbart Entertainment editor Jerome Hudson. How have you been, Jerome?
I've been amazing. I've been amazing. I would say the book comes out October 27th, so buy it, pre-order it, and then go vote, because it is a week away from the election.
That's right. It'll be out Tuesday. If you pre-order it now at Amazon, it'll show up on Tuesday. That's sometimes they send that stuff out a day early on Amazon. Somehow they get away with it. When I worked retail in record stores, the new music day was always Tuesday. And if they caught you sell, you'd get the stuff sometimes Friday or Saturday, but you couldn't sell it till Tuesday. But if they could, but if they caught you, the labels caught you, they would delay you getting future new releases. Yeah. It's a real pain in the ass. So I don't know if the book industry is as fantastic as the record industry used to be, but you can get it sometimes a day early. Whatever it is, you'll have it next Tuesday if you go order it now. First of all, how are things at Breitbart? How are things going over there?
We are now, as of October the 20th, I think I can say this, it's all public knowledge. Breitbart News is the sixth largest news publisher on Facebook. Nice. which is amazing.
And that's in spite of all of their efforts to silence you guys.
This is true. This is very true, Derek. It's a very good point. And also, there are a lot of these organizations, like CNN, for instance, has 33 people who just run CNN's Facebook. We have one person who runs our Facebook. We're beating the New York Times, which is number seven, which, you know, the point is, the company, we're punching way above our weight class, but I just would love to be inside of sort of the executive meetings of the Washington Post and CNN when these numbers come out. Facebook publishes them whenever the hell they want to, really. But when these numbers come out, I just want to be inside, though. Our competitors is ruined. Sugar daddy money into boosting their stories. I mean, we're a small business, and I think we're making Andrew Breitbart very proud every day.
No, there is no doubt. Miss him every day. Did you get a chance to know Andrew? Were you around?
I met him. I publicly say six times because those are the times that I can remember. The first time I met him was, you might have been in Cancun in December 2010. Recovering the UN climate confab down there. It's interesting. They always had those in very warm places.
Mm-hmm. at resorts, at luxury resorts.
Right, right. And so he walks in, there's just a throng of people surrounding him. And the wall of meat sort of part, if you will. And then there is Andrew Breitbart. Standing all of 6 foot two and a half, his hair is he's just fielding questions. And he walks up to me and he spends like 4 or 5 minutes talking to me, which he did throughout that week. But no, I every time I got to talk to him, he was very gracious with his time. I remember being at CPAC when the Shirley Sherrod stuff was going down, and he's just it's like an AP reporter wanting to talk to him, and he's just talking to some young black kid.
Longer. That was how he was. The first day I met him, I had drunkenly purchased a Snuggie. Remember the Snuggie?
Yes, I do.
I lived in downtown Baltimore, just north of downtown Baltimore, and I was out drinking, and on my way home, I went to a CVS to buy whatever you buy at CVS at 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever you're going to regret. And there was a pile of Snuggies, and I'm like, Dad, the hell with it. I'm buying a Snuggie. And I bought a Snuggie, and I woke up and had shame. And I hid it, and I pretended not to have it. And then this girl I was seeing saw it, and I was like, you know what? I should just own this. I did it. And so I took a picture of her in the Snuggie. I took a picture of me in the Snuggie. And then I decided to spread the shame around. And I ended up taking about 150 different people's pictures in this Snuggie, including Grover Norquist, Tucker Carlson. If anybody I met, I would try and get them to take a picture in the Snuggie. So like half the Heritage Foundation was in the Snuggie. And the first night I met Andrew Breitbart was at a bar called Union Pub in 2007 or 8. And I said, you put this on, I want to take your picture. And so he put it on. I took his picture. It's on my Facebook page under the Snuggie Cult tab in the albums. And he's standing there holding a Stella, glass of Stella in his hand. His hair is wild and long. And he's in the middle of a bar in a bright blue Snuggie, looking kind of confused as to why he's doing it. But he never once said no. He didn't resist. I didn't have to twist his arm. He did it.
No, that's right on brand for sure.
That's
just the kind of guy he was. And, you know, we have fun. You know, you asked about the camaraderie's good at Breitbart. We got, you know, the Jerusalem Bureau, the London Bureau's kicking ass. I run the Hollywood page. And so my day is just holding up a mirror to the cranks and wahoos in Hollywood who, it's interesting, Derek, they disparage and smear the very people that they ask to watch their movies and buy their music. It's interesting.
The closest interaction they have with normal people are when their private jets jettison their chemical toilets on us from 35,000 feet. And that's as close as they want. Yet. I got to ask you about Hollywood because you're on it. Chris Pratt is now the target of a social media mob because God forbid the man is a Christian and everybody is just assuming, well, he must vote for Trump. His church is terrible because they believe in, looks it up, the Bible and things like that. His fellow Avengers who are part of generally just about, you know, a Mark Ruffalo is happy to jump on a left-wing mob. But he's pushing back. They're all kind of pushing back against this. I like Chris Pratt. Seemingly, he seems nice. Yeah. But it is kind of refreshing to see one of them eat their own or turn on somebody that they care about, and maybe they'll just open their eyes and go, "This is no way to live."
It's very interesting. I'm trying to, like, listening to you, I'm trying to figure out when exactly this sort of phenomenon happened where. It's kind of like the radicalism in race, right? You, Derek, it's not so much that you were born white, not as if you actually asked to be born white, but it's not so much that you are not racist or that you are not a bigot. You have to be an anti-racist.
Right.
It's the same thing you see in Hollywood. You can't not be politically agnostic. You can't even really be apolitical. You have to be anti-Trump in everything that you do. And so Chris Pratt, you know, not joining in the Avengers fundraiser with all of his colleagues really, I think, was a tipping point for a lot of people. And the bar is very low on social media in terms of the cancel culture mob. I mean, you don't have to do much or not do a lot. But yeah, he's diehard Christian. Chris Pratt doesn't hide his Christendom. And that is heresy. And it doesn't really matter how nice a guy you are. He really is the nice guy. I mean, he did Passengers, for crying out loud. If you haven't seen it, I would just say don't, because it's not good. But
I didn't think that was terrible. You Jennifer know, Hudson, I could, or Jennifer, what's her name? Jennifer Lawrence. I could stare at Jennifer Lawrence.
I remember the circumstances surrounding the day, or I should say the night that I watched it more than I remember the movie. You know, I was on my couch. I remember everything about everything but the movie. It was so bad. I've pooped it out of the repository.
Therapy will do that for you. It's a wonderful thing. One more thing about Hollywood is this controversy about Gal playing Cleopatra and the I mean, you had Zoe Saldana apologizing for playing Nina Simone, now a black woman playing a black woman, but her skin wasn't dark enough to so they had to use makeup. I mean, are we just moving towards documentaries and that's it? Nobody can play anything but them, all reality TV movies. You can only play yourself.
We're going to see We're going to see a reckoning with content. The virus is already upended, right? Studios' ability to film. But we're really going to see the worst fare in terms of entertainment content imaginable. Because, right, for the last decade, they've been doing remakes, redos, race swaps, sequels, prequels. I'm probably missing about four or five.
Yeah.
But now, as this conversation seems to sort of be revolving around the same gravitational pull, which is that everything has to be filtered through race. And it now means that you have to have, according to the Academy, you have to have a certain number of Black bus boys, right? You have to have a certain number of Black female writers in the writer's room. I mean, it's just...
Is there a slide rule available? Because if you cast a Black trans woman, does that check the gay box too? Or like, how do you reconcile that? Because people want to qualify for Oscars, but they need to know on the flow chart of victimhood what the dolly grip is doing at night, if that counts.
And it's, does that person even identify as Black? I mean, do you need a 23andMe, what is it called?
Readout
with your CV or your resume. But this is your point. Like, they're eating their own industry. They will. I'll never forget, I wrote this article about 3 years ago, Julie Delpy. She's won a couple Academy Awards. She's worth, $10, $20 million. And she actually said, Derek, this was a few years ago. She was like, I want to be a Black woman in Hollywood because it's so hard to be a white woman in Hollywood. This was when the whole Me Too dust up was happening.
Has she worked since? She's French, so she kind of gets a pass.
So crazy. I mean, born into privilege like you wouldn't believe. I mean, her dad's like a stage director in theater, and her mom. I mean, Julie Delpy was winning acting awards at 14. It was the most absurd thing. But at that point, though, that was sort of the watershed moment for me. I knew that these people had completely lost their minds. And that's all you're seeing now. That literally is all you're seeing now is... Matthew McConaughey comes out 2 weeks before the election and says, no matter what happens, we need to support the president, whether it be Donald Trump or Joe Biden. And I'm reading that article, Derek, and I'm wondering when I'm going to get to the line in which he just says something ridiculously stupid, and it doesn't happen. But the fact that I'm waiting for him to sort of go mealy mouth, if you will, or say, I don't know, it just common sense.
Well, he's kind of in the category that he doesn't have to worry about that. They'll make a movie because Matthew McConaughey has signed on to it, like that Free State of Jones. There's no reason for that movie to be made, but they made it because, oh, you can get McConaughey? All right, well, then the hell with it. Get McConaughey. Here's $10 million. Go have fun. So those kinds of people are the only people, those in retired actors, are the only people who can speak their minds in Hollywood.
John Voight at this point, and he's got a couple, the John Voights, people like James Woods, who I honestly don't think cares if he ever does a damn gig again in that town. There are people who just don't care. Robert Davi, who was very close with Andrew and has written just amazing pieces that have really stood the test of time at Breitbart News. Robert Davi, he's like you. He's just pumped. Well, he's not like you. He's 60 and he's still pumping out children. But
I am not in it, man.
You're right. It's to say, but he's so gracious. And I talked to him and we're just like brothers. And you look at his IMDb page, like he's already been announced for Goonies 2, right? Like he's, but he still works, but Robert Davi calls out the incessant insanity of Hollywood every day. I think he posts a 2-minute video and he's absolutely right. Like the very people who are some of the most privileged people on the planet. I mean, of course, they maybe have family members, or maybe they came from, you know, places of poverty. Maybe they've lived through hardships. But many of the voices are the people using their platforms to push policies that crush mom and pop stores and crush actual people who aren't worth $10 million. These
I love Leonardo DiCaprio's of the world. Since puberty, Leonardo DiCaprio has been wealthy and famous. He probably hasn't heard the word no from anybody that it could matter from since he's 12 years old, since he was on Growing Pains. He probably, nobody can tell him no. And by 15, he's telling mom to go F herself when she tries to tell him no. And he wants to tell everybody he's figured out how they should live. You're never going to sit, and I'll put my entire net worth on this, you're never going to sit on a Southwest flight next to Leonardo DiCaprio. He is going to fly private everywhere he goes. He's going to tell you about your carbon footprint, lecture you about that, hop on a private jet, and go off for 2 weeks in the Caribbean on a 300-foot yacht filled with Victoria's Secret models. Now, God bless him for that. I want to get an invite to that party, but it's the hypocrisy. I don't even think they're aware of the hypocrisy. Do you?
Leonardo DiCaprio flew a total of 8,000 miles. This was in 2016. I remember writing this story and just looking. Rarely do I write a story, Derek, where I have to look at Google Map, like the Earth. but that's what I had to do, because it's 8,000 miles, right? That's like three trips across. Excuse me, that's four trips across the entire continental U.S.
That's 3,000 miles.
My math is completely horrible, and anyone who buys my new book will be.
Well, that's why God created editors.
So he's at Cannes, right, in France. He flies to New York to accept an award, and he flies back to France. I mean, you're right. And it's not so much to see Leonardo DiCaprio on like a football field length yacht, which is a megaton in carbon emissions. It's not enough to see that. It's just you sort of look at his environmental patronage as him absolving himself, right, from what he knows is a ridiculous sin, at least in his Bible. How can you live the lifestyle that Leonardo DiCaprio lived?
He pays a third world village somewhere to plant trees. He pays them $20 a year to plant trees, so he feels like he's making up for it. You know, that's
sell
indulgences.
He may have done global warming, but I also don't remember him ever actually telling me who to vote for. That is, I think, the most. It's really tired, but the celebrity endorsements. But I just love it when they backfire. Oprah Winfrey flying into Georgia to knock door to door for Stacey Abrams, and then Stacey Abrams losing, never really conceding, but just losing. You get to watch Oprah, that Instagram video of Oprah shocking the hell out of people. You get to watch that forever. In knowing that it did nothing, it had nothing. Hillary Clinton standing on a stage with LeBron James, Jay-Z, and Beyonce in Ohio a week before the election is called, in which the result is Donald Trump beats the hell out of her in that state by 8 percentage points.
Now you have Taylor Swift was literally badgered into becoming political. She's not very bright. She's got horrible taste in men, but she tells you Joe Biden's a keeper.
I'll never forgive her. Like, I wanted to get, and this is the thing maybe about covering in the way that we do it at Breitbart News. I mean, we sort of put on the brass knuckles, and it's just Fight Club rules. They hate us. Not all of them. And there are a lot of people who work hard, right? The below the line people who just, they love their job. They want to support their family. They're good people. But we're talking about that cabal of the wealth, the uber wealthy and privileged people. I try to give them a benefit of the doubt, but I could no longer do that for Taylor Swift after she called Senator Marsha Blackburn Trump in a wig. And it's just like, I mean, you don't have to do that. You really don't. I mean, you just brought up her unbelievably bad taste in men. A lot of the music is just not good. I mean, we know there are hundreds of writers and dozens of producers. I mean, her voice is okay. Mears, the hackneyed attacks Marsha Blackburn is one of the most gracious people. You know, I worked with Peter Schweitzer, Derek, at Government Accountability Institute. My job, 12 hours a day, was just slothing through corruption and filth of how politicians and bureaucrats just take advantage of their positions of power to self-enrich. Kind of like what we're seeing with Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and James Biden and Ashley Biden right now. Marsha Blackburn, I hesitated to say this to her. I host Breitbart News Tonight on SiriusXM Patriot. I almost said, Senator Blackburn, you don't belong in the Senate. Like, you don't belong. Like the swamp doesn't deserve you. She's that nice. for Taylor Swift to attack her in the way she did, I get wanting to speak out. I get that 70% of your base is pro-black.
I think she needed to speak out. I don't think she wanted to speak out. I think she needed to speak out because in 2016, they went at her hard for not coming out for Hillary.
And so when Chris Pratt, who just wants to marry the right woman, and I think he got it right this time with Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter, and raise a family and just make good movies that aren't as bad as Passengers, which was just not helped.
High off Passengers. It was fine.
Chris was Pratt fine. is the brave guy, right? He's the normie. He's the one who just keeps his head down, tries to pump out good, you know, movies that go down easy for families that just want a reprieve from the craziness that the Democrats are dragging us through. And he doesn't speak out about politics, and he gets bashed. We got to cancel him. I think that brings us full circle.
I think, yeah, it does. I think I think the mob has a scalp addiction. It's just like Hunter and his crack problem. It doesn't matter. It's get me somebody. If somebody doesn't step up or accidentally stumble into the spotlight, we'll create it. And that's what Chris Pratt was the victim of. But enough about Hollywood. Let's talk about your book. Let's talk about 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know about Trump. Yeah. Lord knows there's probably 500,000 things that they don't want you to know about Trump. Every day there's a new list. But you get down to the practical in your book. Right there in chapter one, drug overdoses dropped for the first time in 30 years. Now, that is... He came into office talking about the substance abuse problem, the opioid addiction. He lost his brother to alcoholism. So it's something he's famously straight edge. And you watch his Twitter feed every once in a while. You're like, so he doesn't drink. But, most of the time he's been very straight edge. And he's made that a priority. Now, it's kind of gone to hell with the pandemic and people being trapped at home and too much time on their hands, and anybody with an addiction and too much time on their hands is a recipe for disaster. But that's not something I'd heard before, that drug overdoses went down during this opioid crisis.
Yeah, if you broke down the 50 chapters, this one would fall under sort of what you just said. You didn't hear about it. And you, like I, we dedicate probably too much of our lives to the news, but we realize how important it is to get people the actual news. And a lot of people didn't actually get this fact. When it is weird, because I illustrated in the chapter, Derek, how the New York Times even begrudgingly looked at the CDC numbers and admitted that, well, yeah, it did happen. We saw a reduction in drug overdoses for the first time in three decades. And so I put the chart in the chapter so people can see it, sort of a longitudinal picture that we're talking about. Pictures are amazing. And so this one goes into that bucket of it happened, and it happened because Donald Trump was president. He called out the sort of open borders policies, Derek, that have absolutely contributed to the influx of fentanyl coming over the border. The president pressured the State Department to calling out China, China actually marking fentanyl as a substance that is illegal. All of these things contributed to it, and it's weird. It was almost day one when the president came into office. These all contributed into less lethal drugs on the street. And for the first time in three decades, we actually had a reduction of drug overdoses. And I will say, the pushback that I've probably gotten the most from people, Derek, is, well, I mean, how do we know that you know, we could say that that was because of Trump's policies. Well, I don't know if I can say the F word here, but I was almost.
You can say it.
It's like, well, what? Who the fuck else would you attribute it to?
Well, it's amazing how history starts when liberals say it starts, and it ends, say it ends, and it only counts what they say counts. And the economy is Barack Obama's economy when it was good. And that was just the truth, even though they came into office when he was coming into office, they were saying his policies will destroy the economy. He implemented his policies. The economy wasn't destroyed. So now they're trying to take credit for something they said wasn't going to happen. So no. That's us. And it's like, well, he undid a lot of the shit that you did. So how is that you? You said what he was going to do was going to destroy the economy. He did it. It didn't destroy the economy. Why the hell would you get credit for that? They get to make up the rules as they go along, because the only people who would ever call them out on it that aren't on easily dismissed as right wingers are never going to call them out on it.
Yeah. No, but this is one of those things, and it's really a feature of the book. I think it's chapter 14 where I talk about how the media was talking about impeaching, the media and Democrats were talking about impeaching the Donald Trump in March of 2016. It's really the first chapter that I wrote because I knew that I would have fun with it. It would just be fun trying, Derek, to find the first headline that called for Trump's impeachment. And as far as I can tell, it went back to March 2016. Funny thing about that date, Donald Trump wasn't even the Republican nominee at that time. But this chapter about the drug overdoses is kind of why I pushed through in writing the book. When my editor at HarperCollins came to me about a month after my first book came out in September 2019, he said, "Do you think you could do one of these about Donald Trump?" And I said, "Well, let me dig around and see if there are actually 50 objective accomplishments, just good things that happened under his watch." And I got to about 25, and I say push through because the last 25 chapters were hard to find, and it's largely because the media spent 4 years reporting on the personality of President Trump. And oftentimes they didn't give a damn about the policies. And so the CDC has reported, you know, drug-related overdose deaths for decades. We know this. And for the first time in 30 years, if you have a dramatic reduction it brought to you by the president actually enacting policies for prescription pain-killing drugs and fentanyl, if you have a reduction in opioid deaths and drug overdose deaths, like it became one of those things where, well, it was reported, but you bet your damn bottom dollar it would have been celebrated if it happened under Obama. But the fact of the matter is it didn't. And because it happened when Trump was president, it just became one of those chapters in my book.
Well, it's amazing how, you know, there are a lot of accomplishments, but you have to dig to find them because the media doesn't want to report on them. And if they do, they'll leave out Trump. It's amazing when you look back at the coverage of Obama, all of the accomplishments, quote, are glowing write-ups that included his name prominently about what the Obama administration did, blah, blah, blah. All the scandals are
as if these are separate entities, separate and apart from the White House. You can read stories about Lois Lerner and the IRS targeting American citizens because of their political beliefs that you would come away thinking, well, the IRS must be some rogue non-governmental agency. There's no mention of the Obama administration. There's no mention of the White House. There's no mention that it's part of the Treasury Department. Like, it's like this own little island. The way that they frame things are, it's diabolical. It's not by accident, although it might be subconscious at this point, that they find a way to separate the people from the problems if they're on the left, and the accomplishments from the people if they're on the right. And if it's a Republican scandal, the headline, first, second, or third word is always Republican congressman, Republican this. If it's a Democrat, you might have to do a Google search to find out who the hell, what party this person belongs to.
Don't forget your next thought. But the only thing I wanted to say was, if we're talking about a political press, I mean, we really have to recognize that large swaths of these people are activists. They are political leftist activists. Many of them never had a chance. You know, I went to Florida State University. 95% of the liberal arts professors were admitted, and to their credit, they admitted to be liberal Democrats. And so that is the sort of organ pumping out today's journalists. Many of them are millennials or not the loudest and most prominent ones. Remember, you know, how to actually do good journalism and what that might benefit, or how that might benefit the country. What you are talking about, though, I think is what you see when you filter your reporting through a political lens. Because I remember how the political press didn't really want to talk about how the IRS was targeting groups because they were conservative groups in their audits and in their probes of those organizations. But I am also now old enough to live through the New York Times publishing incessantly the coverage about Donald Trump's IRS in how he paid his taxes. Rachel Maddow, I don't think, has recovered from that huge scoop that didn't actually turn out to be a scoop at all in the president's tax returns. And so you sort of see how the one administration is dealt with on the same federal agency and all of the sort of tentacles and tangential stories and narratives that come out of it. It hurts the country. I think you read the introduction, I actually say that, the way that the political press has acted and conducted itself under President Trump, it hurts the country. It's the weight of it, I hope, comes across, because the division and unrest that we see in the country, it does not have to be on razor's edge in the way that it is. And the media has a starring role in that.
Well, speaking of the division, I didn't forget my point. That's why I'm a lowly paid professional. Looking at chapter 2 and chapter 12, Donald Trump is a racist. Okay, I mean, that's not me talking. That's science, right? That is, it's just a scientific fact. But he's also really bad at being a racist. He's horrible at being a racist. Just like when they called him an anti-Semite. Like, he's really bad at, maybe he is an anti-Semite, but he's really bad at doing it. Because he moved to Jerusalem. His top advisors are Jewish. Loves his grandchildren and his daughter and his son-in-law, and they're Jewish. So if somebody needs to sit him down and tell him what an anti-Semite does.
And
so
allegedly he loves him.
There you go. But Donald Trump is a racist, and that is beyond dispute. And apparently for cover, and cover purposes only, he had done something that no previous president had done, which is the historically black colleges used to have to come to Washington, D.C. every year, kiss the ring, beg for money, please give us funding. Donald Trump took that off the table for the next decade, since they only really budget for 10 years in Washington, D.C., and they don't really even do that. He secured funding long-term for historically black colleges and universities, and also Latinos a huge increase in Latinos starting businesses in the United States under Donald Trump. Again, I was told by reliable sources on CNN that he was
the show before, or
no, both, both the human potato and the rest of the morons over there, that he's a wild racist. And this is one of those things that it talk about those two chapters and then talk about the breaking through, because most Republicans never really tried to reach out for the black vote. They recognize, look, and I, on a good day, I'll maybe get 10%. So it's more important for me to focus on other groups that will have a higher rate of showing up and hope that I can counter whatever I don't get out of the black vote. Donald Trump has accomplishments to point to and is trying to reach out to the black community. Seems to be semi-successful, we'll find out, but at least preliminary polling when it comes to black men, not so much black women. But talk about those three things all together, if you will.
Yeah, sure. No, the HBCU funding thing, and again, there's a chart right there in the book so people can see it. I guess, you know, there are truths and now there are alternative truths, but it's right there. Donald Trump, the racist that you, as you properly identify, I should say that Kanye West said he had a conversation with President Trump in the Oval Office. This was a few years ago. And Kanye West said that the President Trump looked him in the eyes and said, I want to be the best president that black America has ever had. And I'm listening to Kanye West say this. You know, this is a mano-a-mano conversation. And you look at the fact that President Trump is a deal maker, right? And he throughout the book, you see him making deals or using sort of the State Department. Or the Justice Department to do things and broker and break new ground in a way that had never been done. And this 100 historically black colleges and universities. And I could just imagine how it went, Derek. Donald Trump came in and was like, you know, he's getting advice from, you know, a lot of people around him. Many of them are black. His advisors, and they're saying, look, a lot of these HBCUs have funding issues and have rampantly had funding issues. And it comes down to sort of the short-term budgeting, as you said, that is just par for the course in Hollywood, in Swamp. And I think Donald Trump said, well, why don't we just do a long-term, longitudinal deal? And that's essentially what he got done. And he I wish I could put this photo in the book, but he has about 102 presidents, provosts from the country's historically black college and universities gathered in the Oval Office. And the president he's just beaming like a little schoolboy. It's just and it's one of those things. It just goes back to it marked for him. He knows now for the next decade that these colleges, many of them having to weigh budget cuts that affect staffing, that affect research. And obviously they are these schools exist and they I mean the class if the student body is majority black. I mean the argument that Donald Trump is a racist just doesn't actually make sense. I mean we're talking about him financially supporting and solidifying support around schools that educate hundreds of thousands of young black people. It's just like, and he did it to the tune in terms of the long term funding. And the amount of funding that put him in the history books, it's truly a testament of and will be a lasting legacy for his administration and for his presidency. I do think that he is going to get a shocking amount of black support because of this. Like, you can't be a president of Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida, where I marched in the band. And, you know, you can't be a professor there or, you know, a professor emeritus. Like, this stuff seeps through. It cuts through sort of the noise and the fog that is created around him. That being these ridiculous claims that he's racist. Like, people sort of, they glom on to it after a while. I don't know if you mentioned it, but he also worked, Donald Trump did, in getting and securing billions in funding for AIDS medication that essentially, I don't know if I can say this, it's essentially a cure for AIDS. And again, it was one of those deals that the president sat down with pharmaceutical companies in the country, with the CDC, with HHS, and said, how do we do this? Right? We have hundreds of thousands of people in America who suffer from this disease. We have life-saving treatment for HIV, which is still technically an epidemic. And so the president gets a deal done, right? Like, obviously, he's got Alex Azar, their Secretary of Health and Human Services. He has people around him. But it doesn't happen if you don't have President Trump. And again, this, you know, I bring this up on the back of him historically funding HBCUs, Black colleges and universities, because, you know, 40,000, you know, Americans are diagnosed every year with HIV, but a large swath of those new positive contractions are Black Americans. It's a sad fact, but it is just a fact. And so the president, you know, orchestrating, you know, a billion-dollar deal for medication to provide to prevent HIV for the next decade, and it a redounding effect on Black people who still sadly contract the virus. I mean, again, it's just one of those things where I don't know if the campaign is touting this stuff enough. And maybe the campaign should just buy 50 things they don't want you to know about Trump and just list the chapters while the president is on the trail. But I wanted Derek to create sort of a narrative in these chapters. And again, you put them in buckets. He has done these things for Black Americans that no other president has done. Donald Trump has done it in the face of ridiculous accusations and castigation that he's a racist. He just didn't give a damn. And I think that promise he made to Kanye West is true. When you look at what he's done, Latinos, to your first or second point, but lastly, Latino Americans are the most entrepreneurial group in the country. The fact that their new business starts grew by a third just goes again to what you were saying. This group of people just blocked out the Paul Krugmans who said that the economy would fall off of a cliff and saw the president cut and slash regulations, right? And saw him institute a historic cut in taxes, which also was a cut in business taxes. And Latinos, the most entrepreneurial group in the country, they actually open more businesses. It's not a coincidence. It just can't be.
No, it can't be. Now, when you're sitting down and it's not, and it's because what conservatives have advocated is always proven when given a chance, even just a little bit of a chance, and it's get government out of the way. Government isn't the solution. Government oftentimes is the problem, even if it's just an ankle weight slowing you down. And if you get government out of the way, people are free to do things they want to do, to try things they want to try. If you make it easier for them to do it, not having government as a partner, that's what the left doesn't like. They want, of course, like the mafia, the government to have a nice little taste, a nice little piece of the action. That ends up stifling innovation. It ends up stifling entrepreneurship.
Ooh, no.
So when yeah, I know, but it's ignored. It is ignored completely. These facts are ignored about Hispanic small businesses. Let me ask you, Jerome, in researching these, which one surprised you the most? Which one did you go, holy crap, I didn't, why have I not heard of this?
No, it's it's a question that I was prepared for. I don't think I was prepared for that question the last time you so graciously brought me on your podcast. You
did. I had like three questions I asked people, so you remembered. That's good. Glad you did your homework.
No, it's the small business boom that occurred under the president, right? And so I'm so prepared that I don't actually remember what chapter it was.
I'll ask your ghostwriter.
So the title of the chapter, I'll tell you, is the average number of new women-owned businesses opened per day reached a record level in 2018. So women-owned businesses in 2018, there was a record level of them per day openings at 1,821 in 2018. And then the number dipped to about 1,817 new women-owned businesses opening per day in 2019. So 2019 wasn't historic, but it was historic level. The thing that I just, sometimes I wake up at 4:30 in the morning because I dug through and the data, and I found that no group had seen more business startups under President Trump than Black women. It basically, new businesses owned by represented the highest rate of growth of any group in that number of new firms between 2018 and 2019. I sort of sat with that for like a couple hours. I was like, it's just insane. I mean, Black women accounted for 42% of new net women owners in 2019. And it's interesting because that basically represents three times the share of the female population. What I wrote after getting all those numbers and that jargon in there, I wanted to create this picture for people to see just how amazing that is. And what I knew, just being a student of political elections, is that Black women support Republicans the least, and they supported Donald Trump historically the least. But the irony is, I mean, it's absolutely amazing, is that subgroup of voters, Black women, who supported President Donald Trump's election the least, actually benefited the most from his economic policy.
You get punched in the face, you bring that up now, you'd be kicked off CNN. You would not be allowed. Don Lemon would come to your house and beat you with your
cat. This is Census Bureau survey data, so... You know, it's right there. They do a survey of business owners. They crunch the numbers, and that's that was Donald Trump's Census Bureau. So maybe they're cooking the numbers. Who knows?
There you go. We've just exposed it. Last question for you, Jerome. What do you want people's takeaway to be here? Because there's going to be a lot of things that they haven't heard before. A lot of things they've been told the contrary of, and you're gonna. Trump supporters will even be surprised by this, but Trump haters or Trump indifference will be shocked by this. What do you want them to stick with them?
You know, it's sort of a really simple message. I know if you're turned off by, you know, the National Review as much as you're turned off by MSNBC, then 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump is a book that you need to read from cover to cover. If you are turned off by the president's tweets or the way he uses words in sentences in public, then 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump is a book that you need to read from cover to cover. I start the sentence off by saying, you know, something that everybody can agree with, which is that Donald Trump wants to be front page news. But no matter who wins the election, Donald Trump got a lot of good things done on behalf of working Americans, period. I mean, that's the takeaway from the book. Regardless of how you feel about his personality, his policies actually improve the lives of Americans. I mean, we hear the statistics about how the poverty rate for Black and Hispanics was driven down at historic levels. But it's hard to drive down the unemployment rate for Asian Americans. President Trump did that. Now, I'm serious about that. This is one of the most financially accomplished educationally stalwart groups of people, Asian Americans in this country. He drove down their unemployment numbers. But the way that the political press has covered this president's presidency, the way that the Democrats have smeared and attacked him, even impeaching him, it hurt the country. And the time that the political press spent reporting on President Trump's personality and the time that Democrats spent attacking him and trying to remove him from office, drudging up years-long investigation built on a dossier that had Russian intelligence in it, and everybody knew it was a lie, the time they spent attacking President Trump was time that we didn't spend celebrating accomplishments that we as a country can be proud of. And so this book is a collection of those accomplishments, just objective good things. That doesn't make it a pro-Trump book, but it's not heresy to say that he did a lot of good things, that he weaved together an amazing story.
The book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump. If you're looking for something to maybe convince your fence-sitting friends, you got 50 bullets in this book. It's available Tuesday. If you pre-order it now, it'll be at your house on Tuesday. It'll give you a full week to go through each one. You can choose based on who you're talking. That's the great thing about having 50 different points is you can have 20 different people that don't care about the same. Now you've got 50 options to go at them with different points of, you know, everything from the economy, the environment, whatever you think is going to appeal to the people who you want to appeal to. Because I'm asked all the time, how do I reach these people? What do I do? And like, well, first of all, if they're, don't waste your time. But if they're gettable, if they're reasonable, if they're open, if they're interested, you get something like 50 things they don't want to know, don't want you to know about Trump, and you find their soft spot and you go in that way. Jerome Hudson, I noticed by your Twitter feed you're a fan of the Atlanta Braves. Sorry about that.
So much. Still reeling a little bit.
Just wanted to pour a little salt on a wound before I let you go. Congratulations on the book. Hopefully, I would say you sell enough copies to get on all the lists, but last time you did, and the list just omitted you because that's how they work.
The Los Angeles Times did not print a number one best-selling paperback book last year. Just I had the numbers.
They had a number two. They had a number two. They you did. Sold more than anybody else, but they couldn't bring themselves to put you in the paper because of journalism or something like that. Yeah. Congratulations on the book. Thanks for the time today.
Thank you. Love you very much.
Really enjoy talking to Jerome Hudson. Could have went on for another 20 hours, really, but I had to do give a speech on podcasting, believe it or not, to the Leadership Institute. So thanks to them for having me. I'm sure it's archived out there on the web. Don't waste your time. I apologize unreservedly to everybody who was in that seminar. Thank you guys for listening. The tomorrow show will be Debate Reaction with Brian Darling. It'll be recorded. It'll be up by midnight. Don't worry. Come hell or high water. It might be, 10 minutes short just because I need that time to edit it together and get it posted on time. But damn it, hell or high water, there is a show at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time every weekday, and then the Curse Show, the Week in Effin' Review at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Awesome Thursday. Have an awesome Thursday, or hope you had an awesome Thursday, depending on when you listen to this. I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.